ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Think about the objects you reach for every single day. Your keys, your phone, all those small things that just do their job. We depend on them without a second thought. But behind each one is a story worth telling. Welcome to Extraordinary Every Day. I'm Anthony Burke. Fancy a cuppa? Tea was first consumed by the Chinese more than 5,000 years ago, a beverage of the elites. Today, it's the most widely ingested drink after water. So how did tea become such a ubiquitous part of our culture? Sharon Johnson is the founder of Australian Tea Masters. She teaches specialised courses in tea education and is the head of education for the World Tea Academy. Sharon, welcome.
Thank you.
What are the earliest origins of tea drinking?
Well, I mean, as you said, it's 5,000 years old as far as we know, but actually there's evidence of them drinking it 2nd century BCE with the Han Dynasty emperors were drinking tea as a medicine. So originally it was a medicinal brew, which has now become an everyday drink.
Right. And so then how did the Chinese consume their tea? Was there a particular kind of ritual? Was it for just for everyone or only some people?
No, it was actually drank as a really strong bitter herbal brew. So it wasn't a drink, you know, drank as we do today with cups and saucers or mugs. It was actually a herbal brew. And then they later used a powdered tea whisked in bowls. And then eventually it moved to loose leaf, to, you know, with all the different varieties that were developed because the emperors all had their own tea masters. And so over time, you know, there's lots and lots of varieties of tea came about, which is why we have thousands of different types of tea today.
So how did the Chinese cultivate and process their tea?
So they planted on the hillsides and they started picking the shoots. There's so many different techniques like pan firing, steaming, rolling, drying. And each area in China has its own specific types of tea. So, you know, you might get a Sichuan black tea up north and they will never have tried a tea, say, from Yunnan in China, which is Pu'er. So each region of China has very different drinking types of tea that they consume.
So tea then spread from China to other countries, like I'm thinking Japan and Korea here. How did their version of the tea world, if you like, differ from the Chinese?
Yeah, so the tea travelled with the Buddhist monks and they were carrying the seeds for, given to them from China into Japan and Korea. Japan developed a lot of steamed green teas and powdered matcha. So that's something that they're known for today, you know, very different style of tea. And Korea focused on pan-fired and roasted green teas in a simpler sort of style. But they also produce a lot of matcha today as well, which people are not aware of.
I've got to ask you about the Japanese tea ceremony. How early in the evolution of tea in Japan did the ceremony itself come along?
I'm not exactly sure of the date it started, but it's grown from, you know, today one of the problems is that the younger generation doesn't like consuming a lot of tea in Japan for the reasons that, you know, they think it all has to be the ceremonial style. So that's where the Japanese have gone much more to coffee, interestingly enough,
wow,
with their younger people. Yeah, because it's not fast, it's not on the go. You know, you sit at a crossing in Japan or Korea and they'll be carrying takeaway coffees instead. So the Japanese tea ceremony, you know, it's very complicated and same with Korean. Both have very complicated tea ceremonies that actually go on for a very long time. Sometimes it takes 30 years to become approved to be a proper tea master in those countries.
Let's move now to the Middle East and Europe. What was that transition like from the East to the West, so to speak?
Yeah, so the Portuguese and the Dutch traders, they carried tea from China in around the 16th and 17th century. And in the beginning, it was an exotic luxury for royal courts and wealthy merchants before it sort of filtered down to the wider society. And of course, the Portuguese princess married to King Charles that really made it become such a specialised drink. And of course, she was fashionable, exotic. She was stimulating and she was a tea-loving princess. And of course, people started to watch her and thinking, oh, this is, if she's drinking it, then we must drink it. And so it really grew in England.
And then, of course, you had the British East India Company. You know, I'm thinking, you know, like that's like global distribution at this point.
Yeah, of course. The company imported mass amounts of Chinese tea into Britain. And then they set up plantations in India and Ceylon. And they turned tea from, you know, the rare luxury into an everyday drink for millions of people around the world where it is today.
Oh, so the British East India Company brought tea to Sri Lanka.
Well, yes, but in the beginning they sent a British spy named Robert Fortune into China, and he actually stole some tea seeds, and that's how it started. He was quite amazing. He lived as a Chinaman, had a palat and the whole lot, dressed up in all the clothes, got carried around it, and he smuggled the tea seeds back, and that's what started to establish the large plantations in Sri Lanka and India.
Did I hear that story correctly? Were those seeds smuggled in a walking cane?
Some were, yes,
and some were.
And some were also in boxes. But he was a botanist, and so some died, and then he went back three times. So it's quite a history of people who are interested in reading about it.
Wow, what a sneak, huh?
And he was 6 foot tall and a Scottish guy, so I don't know how he got away with living as like a Chinaman.
Oh, the factories may be roaring with the boom-a-lacka, zoom-a-lacka wee. But there isn't any roar when the clock strikes four. Everything stops for tea. Oh, a lawyer in a courtroom, in the middle of an alimony plea, has to stop and help him pour when the clock strikes four. Everything stops for tea.
At what point did tea really become a working class drink?
So as the imports grew, obviously they were bringing a lot of tea into England and the prices fell, then tea became more affordable for workers. And so this is where hot, sweet, and they added milky teas, they gave it to miners, factory hands, servants for a quick energy boost on the long, hard days they were working. And
What year was that?
That would have been in the beginning of 18th century, I think, yes. And it's interesting because blending, came about from having so many leftovers on the docks. People would come along to the merchants and say, okay, I tried this tea last time. Next time, I want something different. And so they would end up with lots and lots of leftovers. And that's really how the whole blending process started because people didn't want to have the same tea each time. And some of the very wealthy people had their own little blending cabinets in their house. So they'd have an Assam, they'd have a Sri Lankan tea, they'd have a Keeman from China, and they'd blend in a little glass dish and make their own blends.
Wow. And so, okay, so you kind of mentioned it already, but was that the point at which things like milk and sugar and other additives,
yeah.
So it's not just like tea with hot water anymore, it's now tea with.
Yeah. And of course, milk was added because of porcelain cups. So, they had really fine porcelain cups and they couldn't put the boiling water into the porcelain because it would break. So they were using beautiful porcelain cups from China. And so they started adding milk so that milk would actually cool the cup, down the boiling water hitting the cups and then they wouldn't break.
I love those people sipping, drinking, stirring that Lipton tea. I love those people pouring and jiggling, making that Lipton tea. Look at them jiggling, look at them wiggling, look at them giggling, laughing, smiling, chuckling.
And the tea bag.
The tea bag.
Yes.
How was it invented? There is two arguments. One says it was a New York tea merchant and his name was Thomas Sullivan and he sent his samples out in little tiny silk bags. The customers just dunked them straight in the hot water. They didn't realise that was just, he was sending that out just to carry the tea.
So the tea bag was a mistake?
It was a mistake, yeah. And so they used the silk bags and dunked the whole thing into boiling water. And then people started asking for more of the silk bags. And he thought, hang on a second, I'm onto something, yeah.
And the big companies and brands that helped to create a global tea culture, who were the main players?
Oh, so we've got the Twinings and the Liptons, Tetleys. I mean, in England, you've got PG Tips. I mean, bushels. That's, of course, clever branding. And, you know, they made it beautiful advertising. They made tea look very elegant. I mean, there was a lot of slavery behind it when you look at Africa and India and Sri Lanka. But actually, you know, with the two leaves and a bud and beautiful women plucking tea in the fields. And, yeah, they did some great marketing. So it became a global tea culture.
Now, it seems like we've had a kind of a rebirth of tea. There's lots of tea back out on the shelves now in all sorts of different varieties after going through a fairly, well, I'm sort of thinking back to when I was younger, like, you know, there were maybe two or three types of tea you choose from in your local supermarket. Now you can get all sorts of types of tea. What do you put that down to?
Coffee's done a lot for us in Australia in that respect because, you know, the single origin coffees. I mean, if you think back to coffee, how people would walk in and, I mean, you used to get instant coffee and it was ground into a powder, then it became freeze-dried, then, you know, then they started roasting coffee and people would start to want to know about origin and the beans and things like that. While that's happening with our roasters, which is really great, but they're starting to offer varieties of tea, you know, different types. You know, because there is six categories of tea. There's white, green, oolong, you know, black, yellow tea, pu'er. There's so many different types of tea. And I think people are starting to realise, oh, gosh, you know, I don't have to just drink the same type of tea.
So the future of tea, where to from here?
I think people start to recognise the different varieties. Like I said, the white, the green. I mean, people say green tea is really bitter, but actually there's so many types of green tea and a lot of times they're using too much of the tea, boiling water on the tea, they're brewing it too long. So it's a lot of it's education, which is, you know, obviously what we try hard to do is just to educate people on how to brew. And I think once people start to get into the different varieties, there's always something for everybody.
That was Sharon Johnson, founder of Australian Tea Masters, and thanks to listener Zuli, who suggested today's topic. Sharon, thanks for joining us.
No problems. Thank you for having me.
After more episodes like this, head to ABC Listen and search Anthony Burke's By Design and tap follow.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.